I have no relevant relationships to disclose. Let's see what happens next. All right, there's mine. Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about one particular group of folks who would benefit extensively from a more comprehensive healthcare system and moving towards an integrated care model, and that those are children and adolescents. And there is the non-disclosure slide, nothing to disclose. And this is just to tell you a tiny bit about what we do there at the Teen Screen National Center. We are established by a family foundation. We are a national resource center and have been working on these issues for nearly 10 years. We have been promoting the value of evidence-based screening to provide early detection of mental disorders for children and adolescents. We work in two directions. We work in schools and communities, and in the last 3 years, we've had a great deal of success in the primary care sector. We provide all of our services, tools, and training at no cost. And we have nearly 2,500 active sites in 48 states and 9 foreign nations. So here again, information you know, but let's take a look just quickly at why this is so important. You see here information on the prevalence of mental disorders in youth, much more common than many of us might have believed. And as Andrew indicated, science is telling us more and more that these disorders start early, that they're often are overlapping, and that they can be diagnosed in a surprising number of our youth. Mental illness and even suicide are issues of great concern in our healthcare system. 70% of our youngsters with mental disorders are not identified despite this increasing prevalence, and consequently they do not receive any mental health services. This is especially tragic for youngsters who die by suicide, since it is not a random lightning strike from the sky. It is not something that nobody could predict, and how could you ever know? In fact, in nearly every case, you could know if we were, in fact, looking and asking and able to determine youngsters through screening who are suffering from depression or another potentially deadly mental illness. And as you've heard, NIMH research shows us that these disorders that we used to think happened in young adults and in midlife, in fact, the roots of these disorders that are so disabling and too often deadly begin in adolescence. Half of all mental disorders starting by age 14. The symptoms start 2 to 4 years before the onset of a full-blown disorder. This gives you a lot of time, a real window of opportunity to identify youngsters in the very early stages of disorders that, if undetected and untreated, can become severe. Suicide is not a small problem for our youth. It is the third leading cause of death. And as you can see here, for every suicide that happens that is so tragic for family, for friends, and for community, there are between 100 and 200 attempts. Attempts are very worrisome because people who make attempts, and youth in particular, are likely to go on and make another attempt. Almost as many of our adolescents die by suicide each year as those who die from all other natural causes combined. Adolescence is a very, very healthy time of life. If you think about it, and this is the way we thought about it, you take your youngster to the doctor to be checked up. And they listen to the heart and the lungs, they test the blood and the urine, they give you the good once over. At the healthiest time in life, most adolescents will pass with flying colors. Their heart is strong, their lungs are good, their reflexes are solid, they're in very good shape in general. Very seldom have we thought about checking up on the one organ that is most likely to have a problem, and that's the brain. This is the time of life when the disorders that so often are devastating, psychiatric disorders, mental illnesses, and addictive disorders, this is when they start. As I mentioned, 70% of adolescents see a physician once a year. They get that checkup. Maybe it's a sports physical. Maybe it's the checkup you have to get before you enroll in high school. But physicians, primary care physicians, have not been screening for mental disorders, and even in terms of just that conversation. And I know what that conversation is, because when we first started working with pediatricians, we would say, well, you know, mental health is so important to teens. So do you screen for mental illnesses? And they would say, oh, yeah. And I'd say, well, what screen are you using? Well, I don't exactly screen, but I talk to the youngster. And I say, oh, well, that, you know, a psychiatric interview, that can be good. What do you say? I say, how you doing, Johnny? Everything okay at home? And that, if anything is happening, and that's only happening in about a third of the cases, that's what they're doing, which is not sufficient to get at the issues that we're looking for. And as parents all know, if you say to your kid, how's it going, Johnny? What are they going to say to you? Fine. Okay. You know. So as many as 2 in 3 depressed adolescents, actively depressed adolescents, are not identified by their primary care physician. And even those who have made suicide attempts, who are deeply depressed, are not recognized. So clearly, this is a problem, and we see the consequences. The one we see most often is school failure. I think this is a shocking thing to learn, that nearly 50% of students age 14 and older who drop out of high school suffer from a mental or addictive disorder. This is the highest single cause of high school dropout. We all know the terrible movement of these youngsters from high schools and oftentimes into the juvenile justice system, into the court system. 65% of boys and 75% of girls in one major study of juvenile justice suffer from a diagnosable mental disorder. We know that these kids utilize health care, not mental health care necessarily, but they show up, as do adults, in emergency departments. They are untreated for their mental disorders, and somatic symptoms are often the thing that brings them in to the healthcare system. As you've heard, mental illness is the second leading cause of disability. These are often long-term illnesses and can create that terrible, tragic 20 to 25-year premature mortality. So not finding these kids, not identifying, not giving them what they need has both shorter-term and longer-term consequences all the way out to the tragedy of suicide, where states are spending in excess of $1 billion annually on medical costs just for suicide and suicide attempts by our young people. So any way you want to frame it, the consequences are dire. There is an expert consensus that has been growing over the past 4 or 5 years that says, you know, we can't let this situation continue. We need to address it. And the specialty mental health sector, so separate, so often not a place we think of to go for health care, isn't going to be able to do this by themselves. They are not, in fact, the place where people go. So the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force in 2009 recommended annual depression screening by primary care providers for adolescents. Access to free preventive services is now coming to us through implementation of the Affordable Care Act. The American Academy of Pediatrics has been a leader in this arena, really working with their members to help educate them about mental disorders in youth. Very often they had almost no exposure during their training. Providing through the work of a task force specific guidance and recommendations and a toolkit, and you'll, I think, hear a little bit more about that. The Institute of Medicine has weighed in and indicated that screening is an effective way to prevent disorders. The Society for Adolescent Medicine, the American Academy of Family Physicians, everyone is on board with the notion that we do have screens, they are effective, and we need to start using them regularly as part of that annual checkup that all of us feel is so important. And as you'll hear more later, mental health screening is in there in terms of Medicaid and EPSDT. It's just not very often done or done well, and particularly not often done for adolescents. If it's being done, it's usually with younger children, and that's important, but there's a great vulnerability, again, in adolescents. You've heard a good deal about mental health parity, and you'll be hearing more, but clearly this is one step forward that says, now finally, families who do identify, who are concerned, who do need help for their adolescent, can get that covered. And for many people, for a very long time, and I'm one of those families, you would run through your insurance coverage, but guess what? Mental illness was not over. So people had to pay out of pocket what can become very, very burdensome, very, very difficult, and expensive treatment. CHIPRA, you've heard also about the Children's Health Insurance Program, extended parity protections to managed care plans, serving beneficiaries of the program, and health care reform has now expanded coverage to 30 million additional Americans, and new consumer protections, which I'll mention, as well as really looking, as Andrew indicated, at how can we think about ways to deliver health care to adolescents that they can access more easily, bringing the specialty, separate, siloed mental health system closer to the mainstream of health and medicine. And it's really, to me, ultimately about mainstreaming mental health in healthcare. I'm not going to go through that because I just mentioned that one. And here, parity, you've heard what parity offers, and you've heard some of the challenges that we continue to face with parity, and you'll hear more about that. We have very, very strong regulations. Many of us were thrilled to see them. But it's going to require watchfulness, oversight, and frankly, strong education of consumers and families to make sure that these things are actually available. Here, too, healthcare reform, providing a cornerstone for really helping to integrate and create for the first time on an equal basis comprehensive care. And particularly important are those last two. Family coverage available for young people through age 26. This gets you right through that vulnerable period when so many major mental disorders first onset, all the way starting at 14, 15, 16, all the way out into the mid-20s. So many of the stories that we hear of people whose youngsters go off to school, leave home, and crash and burn, now these folks will have the opportunity for ongoing coverage and continuing support. And similarly, the concerns about pre-existing conditions, ruling people out of coverage, the very people who need the help the most, unable to access. So these are major, major supports to early, effective, and continuous mental health treatment. And again, I won't go through all of that, but the access to preventive care comes to us through the role of the U.S. Preventive Service Task Force, all the services that they have reviewed, receiving an A or B recommendation are included as part of what's covered. And again, looking at what's been such an important leadership role from the American Academy of Pediatrics through their Bright Futures program aimed at younger children, but again, calling for an assessment of psychosocial and behavioral health at all well child visits. And pediatricians have really embraced this and have really begun through the Bright Futures program to see and understand with younger children first that this needs to be integrated, needs to become something that they're comfortable with, confident of, and can then build those important links as necessary to other specialty providers in the community. Many times the pediatrician can identify and in some cases can treat successfully. And we see that with particularly with attention deficit disorder. But where they need to rely on specialty care, where they need to make a referral, these programs have helped them build those connections and networks. I've mentioned a good deal about mental illness and suicide risk. Clearly, if we don't ask kids about these thoughts and feelings and efforts, they are not going to tell us. What's quite shocking is that if you ask them, they do. It's really quite amazing. You would think, because so often for us in our society, these are taboo topics. But when you ask these kids, when you give them a chance, particularly on a computerized screen or on a checklist, to just answer the questions, they may not want to look you in the eye and tell you, but they will tell you, and that is the feeling that they get is one of relief. Finally, they have a way to talk about it. They don't know how to bring the subject up. They may not even know how to describe what they're going through. But if you ask, they will tell you. But it is important to ask. So we've done a lot of work on this in the last few years, and it's why I'm so enthusiastic about the potential for truly comprehensive care, especially starting with youngsters. Starting with kids where pediatricians have this sense already of whole health, starting with pediatricians and family physicians who've already begun to do some of this work over the past 5 years. And I can tell you that where we've gone out and worked with both public and private plans, and you can see here some of the different folks we've been working with, screening is easily adaptable. It can become part of an intake procedure. It can become part of a regular annual checkup. It can be done in the emergency department. It can be done at a well visit. It can be done at a sick visit. It needs to be done. And we've been able to distribute now almost 1 million questionnaires in the last few years. We have now nearly 5,000 providers who are working with these on a regular basis in all these different kinds of locales. So we think part of our job is to demonstrate we can move beyond talking about integrated care, we can move beyond promoting comprehensive health and mental health, co-location, co-service delivery, to actually doing it and learning from it. How does screening work? This is just very simple. It's exactly as you would think. Think about yourself sitting in the doctor's office filling out all those forms, filling out all those papers, or in some places doing something on a little laptop or on a little computer stand. It's quite simple. The questionnaires take less than 5 minutes. They quickly highlight areas of concern. They're easy to score. 80% or 85% or sometimes even 90%, depending on the population and location of kids, will screen totally fine, which is kind of nice for parents to hear, nice for the youngster to hear. We did a mental health checkup. You're good. If you got any questions, any problems, give it a chance to ask if there's something else that they may not have acknowledged or something else they want to talk about. But for that 10, 15, 20% of youngsters in the primary care setting who do have a problem, they're immediately identified, and the physician can immediately zero in on those issues, on those areas, can follow up, can ask about the intensity of the symptoms that have been endorsed, can ask about how long have those symptoms been bothering the youngster, can get a sense of whether they're interfering with daily functioning, can open a conversation that, again, many primary care physicians have had trouble doing, and many youngsters don't know how to raise the issue. So screening not only gives us some evidence-based information about a youngster who may be at risk, and I want to emphasize it's not a diagnosis, it's a screen. It's a red flag. It says there could be something here. The physician can immediately investigate a bit further, find out more about it, find out if the questions were well understood, find out if it's a situation that is so significant that there's an immediate referral that's needed, or whether it's something that's very mild, maybe of shorter duration, and may require just a few sessions of counseling, may require some conversation with parents about rearranging things in the home situation. But whatever it is, screening helps to identify it early. And if you do screen annually, you build a record. You build a history. You begin to see over time how the youngster's emotional health is developing, how their mental health is growing, and whether worrisome symptoms of mental disorders are persisting or growing more severe. So it's all exciting, it's all good, the possibilities and the clarity and the response we've seen, but there's still plenty that we need to do to make this a routine, ordinary part of care, part of the average youngster's expectation when they go to the doctor. So we certainly would love to see these action steps. We'd like to see state Medicaid report, actually file a report on EPSDT screenings for adolescents. You and I know that what gets reported tends to get done. We'd like to promote depression screening for adolescents as a quality measure in all health plans. Quality measures and accountability are extremely important in the health reform era, and we think this is a vital one. We'd like to include much more training about adolescent health and depression screening in the funds that HRSA is making available to federally qualified health centers. As you heard, they're doing some work to co-locate in those centers mental health specialists. We'd like to assure the availability of depression screening is part of the public education that needs to go on so members of our society, parents and youngsters, understand that this is something they should be asking for, that they should be looking for, that they should be expecting. And finally, we want to strengthen medical education for pediatricians and other primary care physicians who generally tell us, I feel uncomfortable with mental health. I don't know anything about it, you know, and the only training they may have had may have been in a hospital ward. with the most severe youngsters. They really haven't thought about it as part of whole health, as part of an integrated picture of a well-functioning, healthy youngster. So those are recommendations that we would suggest would truly integrate for children and adolescents' mental health in healthcare.